Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on December 5th of 2010, under the headline, Temperance Crusaders Showed Saloon Keeper a Real Bar Fight. In the spring of 1874, something closely resembling a riot took place on the streets of downtown Portland. And as you may have guessed, alcohol was involved, but it's probably not what you think. In 1874, the temperance movement was sweeping the nation. Saloon keepers and brewers and distillers and other traffickers in demon rum were getting a little nervous about it. It was spearheaded by activists who were invulnerable to attack, against whom every mudslinging attempt redounded against the would-be mudslinger. Upper-crust Victorian ladies. Praying. Singing hymns. In Portland, the temperance movement found a champion in the Portland Daily Bulletin, the reform movement's answer to the Oregonian in that age of multiple daily newspapers in tiny frontier cities. Actually, the Bulletin was Ben Holliday's answer to the Oregonian. But that's another story. The ladies' crusade against that mighty and terrible ruler, Old King Alcohol, as the Bulletin phrased it, started with the formation of a local temperance society in the image of similar outfits back east. Primarily, this was composed of ladies who either were tired of their husbands drinking all the time or found the spectacle of a boozy Friday night near the waterfront unseemly. They started out by praying and singing hymns for extended periods of time in their churches. This didn't prove particularly effective, as the pub-crawling set wasn't seen much in churches, at least not until Saturday night melted into Sunday morning, so they decided to go forth and beard the lion in his den. First, they split their cohort of a dozen or so ladies up into pairs, like Mormon missionaries, and went out to make some house calls to as many local watering holes as possible. At the end of the day, the saloon keepers were delighted. The presence of two full-blown upper-class Victorian ladies, praying and singing and pleading for temperance in the taverns, it stimulated business in a rather astonishing way. It was kind of like having a circus in the pub. Not surprisingly, the Bulletin reports that, quote, "In most cases, the ladies were treated in a respectful manner," although it does go on to complain that, quote, "we heard of one case where they were shamefully abused by the proprietress of a low doggery on 2nd Street." Respectful or no, the ladies knew they were being made fun of. Quote, "The little bands had met with but meager success, and discouragement presented itself at every hand," the Bulletin noted glumly. "Their pledges of abstinence from alcohol received but few signatures, most of which were fictitious names." Demoralized, they returned to their churches. Amid the rejoicing, though, some of the saloon keepers were a little worried. And well, they should have been. The next day, March 25th, 1874, the ladies tried something new. All 13 of them descended, en masse, on Thomas Shardle's saloon, the Mount Hood, on 1st Street. At first it seemed like a repeat of the previous day's disaster. Quote, "Their hymns and prayers were made sport of. The liquor business was never better than it was when they were present." Many jovial bar patrons jokingly drank toasts to the success of their crusade, gestures of encouragement which a few dozen years later they might have had cause to regret. Even so, it was immediately clear that the new strategy was a big improvement. The ladies may not have had instant success, but they had each other to lean on, and as the public learned what was going on, their numbers started to swell. Moreover, once the novelty of carol-singing ladies hogging all the bar stools wore off, business stopped surging when they came to a saloon, and the saloon keeper's welcome got a lot less cordial. By early April, there were dozens of them, and their arrival at a tavern meant not a lucrative afternoon, but the effective closure of the bar for as long as they chose to stay. The hymn was probably their most effective weapon. It's hard to guzzle gin when "Nearer My God to Thee" is roaring in one's ears with the strength of three or four dozen zealous voices, especially if one or more of those voices belongs to a family friend. However, there were lots of bars downtown, and most of them were not infested with temperance crusaders. Those who wanted to drink could do so in peace elsewhere, and so they did. So most barkeepers just gritted their teeth and sucked it up, trying to use a metaphor 50 years before its time, trying to stay off the ladies' radar. But there was one, Walter Moffat, the owner of the notorious Webfoot Saloon, who quickly became an exception. Moffat refused to let the ladies into his bar at all, so they ranged on the sidewalk outside and sang as if they were bringing down the walls of Jericho. Moffat responded by hiring people to beat big Chinese gongs to drown them out. One of these, the Bulletin reports, was diligently beating his gong right next to a singing lady's head on April 2nd when his victim suddenly snatched it from him and, quote, retained possession of it. As the weeks went on, the feud with the Webfoot worsened. Lighted strings of firecrackers were thrown out the window at the ladies, which legally, given the flammability of the clothing of the day, probably constituted reckless endangering. Later, the bartender chose a particularly convenient time to hose off the outside of the establishment. The ladies sang on, dripping wet in expensive garments that were probably ruined. The tavern's hired gong beater, the Bulletin sniffed, quote,
made himself particularly obnoxious to every citizen who had the least respect for decency.
Finally, Moffat swore out a warrant for their arrest on a charge of disorderly conduct. Apparently, the Bulletin scoffed, praying and singing in public was disorderly behavior. Who knew? The first time the judge threw the case out. But when the ladies were arrested again, this time on a disturbing the peace rap, a trial was scheduled. This time the legal theory was different. The ladies hadn't disturbed the peace personally. The crowd of rowdies who had come to watch them square off with the red Webfoot had. And because without the ladies there would have been no riot, the ladies were being charged. The jury, somewhat reluctantly, found them guilty, and they were sentenced to pay a fine of $5 each or spend the night in jail. To the surprise of almost everyone in court, the ladies insisted on the jail option and would not be talked out of it. Once incarcerated, the ladies made the joint ring with songs of praise and hymns and prayers for the souls of the city's drinking men. It must have gotten on the police chief's nerves because they were released early. On the other hand, the police chief at that time was part owner of the most prestigious saloon in town, the Oro Fino, so there may have been more than simple annoyance in his hostility to their program. The temperance fight continued, of course, until Congress passed the Volstead Act into effect in 1919, kicking off the great American experiment with prohibition. Oregon got into it a little bit earlier than that, with a statewide prohibition law. By then, many cities had witnessed scenes like Portland's showdown at the Webfoot, but few of them could boast of any quite so colorful. That's the end of today's story. Key sources in which included works by Malcolm Clark Jr., William L. Sullivan, and the Portland Daily Bulletin Archives from 1874. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com or ping me on Twitter at @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.